Hello, I'm Mark Steiner.
And I'm Anthony McCarthy.
And welcome to this Monday. We're going to talk about Mayor Schaefer, which I know Anthony did on your show on Friday.
We sure did.
And we'll talk a bit about that in this hour as well. And the passing of Mayor William Donald Schaefer, Governor William Donald Schaefer. We'll also talk about the attack on the transgender woman at McDonald's. There is a rally in her support and defense tonight at that McDonald's in Kenwood. And we'll talk about that as well with you all. So stay with us and we'll be right back. Where are we going? We're going to WEA traffic. Check on the roads on this beautiful, beautiful spring day. Stay with us. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner.
Good afternoon. I'm Anthony McCarthy.
And welcome. It is Monday, and we are together again this Monday.
It's great to be here, Mark.
Always good to have you in the studio, man. The man who knows more about politics in this town than most people have forgotten. Is that how you're supposed to say it? No. Who's forgotten more about politics in the city than most people know.
That's
what I'm trying to
say. I'm not sure if that's true, but I know a little bit about a lot of things.
410-319-8888. 410-319-8888 is the number here. We want to talk about a couple of things this hour with you all, one is about William Donald Schaefer and his passing. His funeral is Wednesday. Man who was mayor for four terms and governor for two terms and comptroller for two terms, and then was defeated because of some of the things he said at the end that kind of made people go nuts, and even in his old neighborhoods he didn't get the votes.
That's right.
That he got before. I was reading you something. I'll read it to you.
It's fascinating what you've written.
I won't read the whole thing. I'm just going to read the first couple paragraphs. I started writing this thing that my editor, also doubles as my wife, is not letting me put up until she finishes editing. But this is what I wrote about, the beginning of what I wrote about him. Mayor William Donald Schaefer screamed, "Don't ever mention that bastard's name in my office again," as he swept the corner of his desk clean with the back of his hand. I was the subject of his ire that day, so said my friend who was one of his trusted right hands. Just a few years earlier, Mayor Schaefer had given me awards for my work using theater in inner-city neighborhoods to counter violence and teen pregnancy. The problem was that I had the temerity to manage the then-Judge Billy Murphy's 1983 quixotic mayoral campaign against him. I really loved Willie Don, but we had an interesting relationship over the years. We became friendly again 10 or so years later when I began my radio show. At the end of his time as governor, when he was sliding into life as our comptroller, he always referred to me as that nice young man. I'm not sure if I was forgiven my past sins or if he had just forgotten who I was the decade before. You could always see him walking the streets around City Hall without an entourage or bodyguard. A bodyguard detail, though he lived through murder at City Hall. Just a little Baltimore guy going for a stroll to grab some lunch or heading off to a meeting. He said hello to everyone and tipped his hat to the ladies. Many citizens stopped him on his walks to talk about problems in their neighborhoods. He wrote down the information, and you could be sure that you would hear from him and the problem would be addressed. If he saw something on one of his sojourns that displeased him, from trash to potholes, he would come storming back into City Hall, threatening to send the errant political civil servant responsible to Lower Slobovia if the matter was not taken care of instantly. William Donald Schaefer was the do-it-now mayor. And how. And I can go on and on. But I started writing also about the complexity of his life as mayor. He came out of that, as we were talking about when in the air, he came out of that old, white, and racist political good old boy system when black folks were relegated to the 4th District and not all 3 council seats at that in the beginning. And he came out of that world and out of the rebellion of 68. When he was president of city council and ran for mayor because then Tommy D'Alessandro III refused to run again after that.
Mm-hmm.
And he had 2 black opponents.
That's right.
You remember? State Senator Clarence Mitchell and then City Solicitor George Russell. And Clarence Mitchell was the kind of radical candidate and George was the more establishment candidate of the black middle class.
Mm-hmm.
And Schaefer won. And so people always thought he I always thought Schaefer grew when it came to race. He began to change, appointing the first black police commissioner in the city of Baltimore. And many people on his staff who he appointed in the cabinet.
Including were, African-American right, women.
But he, a lot of people around him were women. And he got trouble always calling women little girls.
That's right.
Right? Mm-hmm. Cute little girl, whatever, that he would say. But almost all the people around him were powerful,
strong women.
Bright women. He was who he let them run this city in many ways. And on the same hand, I remember we ran the campaign in 1983 for Billy Murphy, and it was an interesting campaign, and we were soundly defeated. But one of our issues, which I thought was really correct back then, was that it was the outer harbor we
That's
talked
right.
about. The inner harbor did not take care of the outer harbor was our slogan, because many inner city neighborhoods and black middle class neighborhoods like Forest Park and others,
Ashburton
were neglected, and I think that there was some truth to that as well. And he did take the city that was dying and breathe life back into it. And I, you know, he breathed life back into the Inner Harbor and Dollar Houses and Morris Mechanic Theater and all the things that he built. The negative side of that was that's what gave rise to the power of all the developers in this town that really control this city in terms of what goes on, from my perspective. And then you also, Schaefer was a very complex guy. I mean, he was like, you know, the rubber ducky jumping in the pond, but he was also like a visionary in terms of seeing a city that could be very different. So he's a very complex guy. I think he was as simple as people want to make him.
And, you know, Mark, as we have, some people would say, endured the massive amount of coverage of his career, his life.
Right.
Other people would say it was an appropriate remembrance of a man who was larger than life in the political life of not just this city, but the entire state of Maryland. And he took his management style to Annapolis and found that he ran head first right into a legislature that didn't always do what he wanted to do, but somehow always seemed to bend to this colorful character at the end of the day. And he had, Mark, for all of the criticism, and certainly on my show on Friday, there were a lot of criticism of William Donald Schaefer. He really did. Even his critics said his love for this city was unimaginable. He had a passion for Baltimore that hasn't been equaled. And I think that that's why people will line up at City Hall tonight and tomorrow. That's why they lined up 2 hours early in Annapolis to say their final farewells. But the other thing I would add is that he was a master of relationships. And even as you said, as he would make his way, you do not know the number of people who've stopped me over the last week who said, you know, my fondest memory is I was walking down the street and I saw William Donald Schaefer. And he stopped and he spoke to me. And that means a lot when you connect, when someone like a mayor or a governor connects with citizens, it makes a huge difference in how you feel about your city. I watched, Mark, on YouTube, and I'm sure you've seen it, the old commercials, public service announcements that he had created about cleaning up the city and taking his shot into the trash basket. And just that kind of energy that led him to what some people say was kind of buffoonish and goofy for him to jump into the seal pond at the aquarium. But it made news around the world, and it made Baltimore and its inner harbor a destination for tourists from around the world. So, you know, it's an amazing thing. And, Mark, you know I'm a political junkie, and I love history, and I love the history of my adopted city, Baltimore. And you cannot think of the history of this city without thinking about the contributions that William Donald Schaefer made. When I was a little boy, I came here to – my father had a massive stroke here in Baltimore. He was living here. And I came here to accompany my family as they brought him back to Virginia. I'd never been to Baltimore. But that harbor, Mark, terrified me. When I was a little tiny boy,
it was all the derelict. It was
something, and then in just short order, in a partnership with Mr. Rouse and others, and a lot of developers, he changes. It sounds like an appropriate word, but it's not even an appropriate word. He transformed the Inner Harbor. So there's a lot to this legacy, and
there is. I mean, and I think again, as I said, it's complex. It's not easy. I mean, a lot of people have critiques of William Donald Schaefer. I never liked him. I had my issues with him on the air often, you know. I'm interested in what our listeners think. I mean, be very honest. Come up with your thoughts about what this means. I mean, here's a man who's four terms as governor, four terms as mayor, two terms as governor, two terms as comptroller. I remember the race against him that we ran for Billy Murphy. He handed it to us.
But you know what, Mark? I also read that he worried about that race down to the very last minute.
Yes.
He was really, really worried.
We ran a hard campaign.
That you all were going to beat him.
Uh-huh. But, you know.
And at the end of the day.
Beating a sitting mayor.
It's hard.
It's hard in this city. It can happen, but it's very hard. Maybe it can happen. We'll see. Who knows? There's a very tough race coming up.
That's right.
410-319-8888. What are your thoughts? Is it Carlton in Pikesville? You're on the air.
Hey, Mark. Hey, Anthony. How you doing?
Hey, brother.
Hey, look, Mark, I'm going to make you remember me through Governor Schaefer.
Okay.
I'm Reverend Vaughn's son.
Oh, yes. Yes.
He used to be Billy's pastor.
Yes, yes.
Well, here's what I give you a true story. Governor Schaefer was like a uncle because when the 68 riots hit, I believe he was president of the city council. He had Vernon Dobson and my dad to go and calm the people down on Gay Street. Because you remember the rioting and all of the craziness that was going on here.
Yes.
But as I grew up, this is something that Anthony never heard from me, but I'll say it here. When I became a registered voter, I went to talk to Governor Schaefer at that time. Ronald Reagan was getting ready to become president. I said to him that I just registered as a Republican. He said, great, because I'm endorsing Ronald Reagan and George Bush because they're my friends. And this is the honest to God's truth. And he says, you know something, young man? I've mentored you along with Kitty Mueller and all the rest. He says, now I'm going to tell you something. He says, I want you to do one thing. He says, whatever you do, care about the people if you ever run. And one of the funny things that he said to me the first time that I thought I was going to run for the United States Senate, he gave me a story. He says, I'm going to tell you something about the man that you're going to run against. He says, when I didn't want to run for governor, Marvin Mandel and the party heads told me that I needed to run instead of having Ben Cardin run for governor, because Ben Cardin can't beat Stephen Sacks and Perrin Mitchell. And he says, the biggest problem that I had with you, young man, was because Perrin was your godfather and I'm your uncle, so who are you going to help? And I never thought about that. So afterwards, as I moved on, and I'm going to wind it up because I know you got a lot of other callers, I found that regardless of party, all he was about was people. And at the end of the day, that's all he loved. He had a love for Baltimore and even more for the state of Maryland.
That was so true, Corgan.
Thank you, Corgan. Yeah.
That was great. Great memories.
Good to hear from you. That was a piece of him. That's why I say he grew. He may not have grown the way people wanted him completely, but he grew. 410-319-8888. Give us your thoughts. We'd like to hear your remembrances. Maybe you think he was a great mayor. Maybe a terrible mayor. Your thoughts as governor, as a man, what his legacy is for the city, because it is a legacy. I mean, he's this town. You look around and you see the way the university campuses look, the way the Inner Harbor looks, the way the city has changed from a dying industrial town into, it's still got a lot of dying in it. Got a lot to do here.
But a lot of work left to be done.
But he made a difference. And Aaron, you're on the air.
Well, you know, I really can't get with the sanctifying of William Donald Schaefer. When I look at the rest of this city and see why he built downtown, why he neglected the rest of this city, and Mark, I recall that 83 campaign because I worked in that Murphy campaign as well. And when I look at the way this city school system started declining under his leadership and the way that this city's decline really began under his leadership because he neglected the rest of this city to build downtown, he has no legacy that I could feel proud of.
All right, you know, but what I understand that. And what I will posit here, though, is I think that we always have, I think, we always have these kind of like one, you know, my kind of linear views of what we see the past as being. And I think that I think what you're saying is true. There's no question that I think that the city schools deteriorated under Mayor William Donald Schaefer's leadership. I don't disagree with that at all. There's a lot of critique, but I'm the last person to sanctify anybody. I don't believe in saints. Even human beings who do good and they do bad, and they do usually a combination of the two. You know, that there's no purity on this planet.
No, I'm not saying there's purity, but when I look at William Donald Schaefer's legacy to the poorest of the poor in this city, I don't feel anything worthy of honor, to be honest.
Nothing. Can't see anything.
Not a thing.
Okay.
All right.
Appreciate you, Aaron.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
So I can't. That's what I can really understand the critique of about the neglect of African American neighborhoods, and I think that has a lot of ring of truth to it. But
and also, Mark,
and not but
yeah, there is also, Mark, a lot of talk, as I've been talking to some of the African American leaders in our city, and I've certainly talked to everyone. But it was very interesting to listen to people. Who were critiquing the legacy, people who were here during all of the Schaefer years. I was not a student of politics in this city, but certainly was not here during his time as mayor, but certainly here during his time as governor. But it was very interesting to me, Mark, how even a lot of the established black leadership and political club at that time, political club leaders would say he had his picks. He had his pick of blacks. That he wanted around him, that he made sure got contracts, that he made sure had access. There's some talk that little Willie Adams could walk in City Hall anytime he wanted to and ask to see the mayor and would have carte blanche in getting in and discussing what his concerns were with Mayor Schaefer. But I'm not sure if we boil that down, Mark, I'm not sure if that's different from any other mayor who people have access to,
right,
and have relationships with.
I mean, he had what you're talking about, and Daisy and Hank are going to come to your next calls in just 1 second, get both of you on here. I just want to make a comment on what Anthony just said. Little Willie, Baltimore was in the 50s and 60s. Baltimore was a city of political bosses.
That's right. And remember that. That's right.
And every ethnic community had its political boss. Right? So you had Irv Kovens in the Jewish machine on the West Side, mm-hmm. who was also the mentor to William Donald Schaefer.
That's right.
You had folks in South Baltimore, Soft Shoes McGurk. You had, but in the black community, it was Little Willie. Little Willie was the political power. All these guys had their hands in stuff other than politics. We'll leave it there. People always knew it. But people had their, Baltimore was a segregated city under the illusion that it wasn't, in some ways, you know, and so Willie did have that power, and on the East Side it was Dew and his group on the East Side that had their power as well, and Dew was connected to Willie, and Dew Burns, I mean, who
That's
became
right.
the first African American mayor,
city was council president being,
and inherited the mayorship, and mayorship. When Schaefer went to become governor. So, I mean, it was a very different era that they came out of, and a very different era.
And Baltimore, to its credit, and I know we're going to go right to the callers now, but Baltimore was very much a different city. And as much as people are critical, because, Mark, as you said at the top of the show, there's a lot of work left to be done here in our city. There's a lot of neighborhoods that need a lot of attention and a lot of small businesses that are shutting their doors that somebody needs to find a way to turn the corner on a lot of these challenges. But I have to say, as someone who just watched and read and learned over the last couple of years, you have to give William Donald Schaefer his due, I guess as some people say, his props at the love and commitment he had for this city and this state.
Props or no props, folks? I mean, a little, not much, a whole lot. 410-319-8888. Go to Daisy first, then to Hank. Daisy, you're on the air.
Yes, I just wanted to call to say that I'm very surprised, and I'm honored, and I'm glad that he has given him the praise that he do deserve. He, over the years, he appreciated the volunteers at the Department of Social Services and in the 80s. And when I became a state employee, he kept our health care services going for the elderly because we were on the block for cutting, budget cuts. And when he found out what our unit was all about, he kept us on then in the 80s, and we're still serving our residents. But like you said, Mark, over the years, times have changed, and, you know, we see a lot that needs to be done, and it takes more than one person now. You know, it takes, I guess, the whole world, United States, to be together because of all the budget cuts. But he made sure the elderly kept their health services, and he felt like it wouldn't have been fair to cut their services and still give family services. And right. He was a great person, and we were sad when he went to the state office, but I felt like maybe he thought he could help more being there in the state, you know, service. But he did a lot, and my dad remembered him when he was a little boy and, you know, working down by the waterfront and working for McCormick, and he told me stories of how he met Mr. Schaefer before he became mayor,
mm-hmm.
and how he used to shine his shoes when he was a little boy. And my father would have been about 77 if he had lived today, mm-hmm. and I'm sure he would have been proud of him.
Daisy, thank you so much for your thoughts.
That's nice.
Thank you.
I appreciate being part of the show. 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888, and Hank, you're on the air.
How are you doing today, gentlemen?
Good. Hank, hey. Hank, let me tell you, by the way, man, I want to say I appreciate you doing the fun drive, coming over here, contributing, your wife working here doing the fun drive, and just showing your support that you did for WEAA. I got to tell you that.
Hey, what is public radio if the public doesn't help?
That's it.
Right? That's all I have to say about that.
Okay. But anyway,
as far as Mr. Schaefer, I want to go back to something you said last week. Last week, y'all asked about what did y'all think how he did for the city. And everybody gave their opinion on him. As far as the city, yeah, he didn't do a lot for the outer city, right? But what he did for the inner harbor, if you latched on to it, right, then he did something. Let's look at that. I mean, let's be honest and truthful, right? Right now in 2011, Baltimore City is within the top 5% for black people, right? This is where one of the top 5 to 10 cities that a black person can make it, right? The Dollar House, had you paid attention to it and you actually saved up a couple of $10,000, then you could have got the Dollar House, because the whole thing was you had to have $10,000 in the bank for the Dollar House to work.
Right.
Nobody wanted to pay attention to that, right? And if you didn't take advantage of it, then sorry. Right.
Why talk about Mr. Mangum?
But another thing, right? One thing he didn't do ever was he didn't try to cut away education. He didn't do too much education cutting because he knew that was going to be the backbone. So, although he had a lot of faults, I didn't like him because of what he said to what was it, Mary Pat Clark or the other lady by calling her names and stuff like that.
Janet Owens.
Yeah, I didn't appreciate that.
No, I didn't either.
It was my throwing, right?
Right.
And I thought that he would be a little bit better than that being in office law. But he did a lot of stuff for the state. And that's one thing you cannot deny, right? Now, if you wasn't smart enough to pick up on it and run with him, then you got left behind, right? And I give you this example, right? The whole Bond Street where I grew up at, Bond and Preston, is pretty much gone except for 4 houses, right?
Right.
But
that's right.
However, we still own the very house that I was raised up at, right? So if you and your family allowed your family to be degraded and torn apart, then you need to start, like I told my son, every time something go wrong, it ain't somebody else. Start turning around and looking in the mirror at what you did to create the problems you got.
Hank, it's always good to hear your thoughts.
It's always good to talk to you, gentlemen.
Take care.
And I can't wait till the next fundraiser.
All right.
Thanks, Hank.
Hank is the philosopher Hack. Yes.
Yeah, I agree.
410-319-8888. Catherine, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Hi, Mark, and hi, Anthony.
Hi, Catherine.
I'm calling in regards to Mayor Schaefer. And when I was in high school, in the 70s, I went to Carver Vocational Technical High School. And under Mayor Schaefer's leadership, we had a delegation from Japan to come to Carver Vocational Technical High School to see how the trades were, to see what we did in school so that they could go back to Japan and set up, make a blueprint, a model of what we were doing at Carver Vocational technical high school back in the 70s, and we had a luncheon where Mayor Schaefer came, and the schools were really great when I was in school in the 70s, and I have since gone on to earn 3 college degrees and have a small business. But I also want to say this. When I grew up in Irvington, there were small businesses, corner stores, there were barbershops, there were cleaners, they were owned by African Americans.
Yep.
And that's what I grew up with. I grew up around entrepreneurs in a middle-class neighborhood where there were homeowners and there were families, and the communities were different then. And so that's what I do remember about Mayor Schaefer, although, and his mother living on Edgewood Street and seeing the police always out there at her house. But I do understand that, you know, culture has changed and drugs came into our communities and the families changed. And so with that, I followed the gentleman who hung up the phone. You know, people living in communities have to change the communities as well as exercise their right to vote and organize and change the politics and change things, because we can do it if we organize.
Kath, I agree with that completely, and I'd like to hear much more about your ideas about that. I appreciate your thoughts today as well. I think that it is a matter of organizing. If people want to change things, and things can change. And I think you can't you got to remember somebody for their legacy, what they've done, warts and all. But you can't detract from the powerful things people did. You can still be critical of what you think the shortcomings were. And also, as Hank would say, look in the mirror. 410-319-8888. Catherine, thank you so much. Mike, you're on the air.
Hey, Mark.
Mike Johnson.
How are you doing? It's Mike Johnson.
How are you, man? Good.
Anthony.
Hey, Michael.
How are you?
So what are your thoughts?
Oh, well, you know, I mean, I think it's important for folks. Like, I agree with both of you when you're making the point that in his time, he's like the last of the great big city mayors, you know, the Richard Daleys and the Rockefellers, all of the late great mayors. He was the last one to kind of hang on there when a lot of our urban cities were being transformed into African-American leadership at that time. I mean, Baltimore City was one of the last.
That's right.
To have its African-American mayor at that time and since then, except for a little stopover from O'Malley. But with that, I had 2 incidents with him. Three, actually. One was, of course, working with you, Mark, and the Billy Murphy's campaign. And I remember we would come to the campaign office, and our lights were cut off, or the water was cut off.
I remember that, too.
The lights or the water would be cut off or anything that would probably happen. And then I also remember as a young boy playing Little League baseball at Twine, the baseball field, and the grass was too long, and he was coming from the Pimlico Hotel at the time, which was a place that a lot of the politicians, Marvin Mandel and them, used to hang out. And we caught him on Park Heights and Classic Avenue and told him we couldn't play ball because the grass wasn't cut. And less than 30 minutes later, you know, he got on the phone and we had 5 trucks came down and they lined the field and he brought brand new bases and stuff like that. And then my last time experience, it was interesting. I was the president of my senior class, and that was the same time that he was removing Roland Patterson as the first African-American school superintendent. And, of course, my speech was always pre-read by my advisor, and then, of course, I said what I wanted to say at graduation anyway. And at that time, after I gave my speech, Schaefer came up to me and said, "That was a very good speech." Wrong, but that was a very good speech. And so I understand the outreach and the people who think, and at the time it was a good thing. But, you know, when you look at the map today of where he went and where he didn't go, you know, I think it's really an indictment as equally with a lot of African-American leadership who, through doing his time, didn't do a lot of the right things either. So, you know, I salute him. And wish him well, because I'm quite sure there's going to be some interesting stories he's got to tell. But at the end of the day, you know, I think that our city has been a lot is better because of him. But in some levels, I think it's also in a lot of trouble because of him. And thank you, Mark and Anthony, for giving me this time.
Well, Mac, I appreciate you calling. I'm glad you did that. We're going to go to break here. I want to read an email as we go to break, and then we're going to jump into a break and come back. And maybe talk a bit about Schaefer, but we do want to talk about the beating of Christy Polis with a transgender woman, and there's a rally for her tonight at that McDonald's in Kenwood. We'll talk about that and get your thoughts on that as well. But this is a – let me just read it. Before we go to break, I'm going to read this email and we'll go to break here. Hi, Mark. I hope you discuss Schaefer's legacy that will let your listeners know that about William Donald Schaefer Civic Fund at the Baltimore Community Foundation. His closest friends and associates have asked that in lieu of flowers, people send memorial gifts to the Schaefer Civic Fund. Schaefer set up his Civic Fund while he was mayor, and private citizens donated to the fund, which was used to distribute small grants to neighborhoods to put up flagpoles, turn empty lots into gardens, and other such projects. A couple of years ago, Governor Schaefer moved the Civic Fund to the Baltimore Community Foundation, adding to its leftover campaign funds. Adding to it all of his leftover campaign funds. He even donated his house to the fund after he moved to Charlestown Retirement Community. He wanted his Civic Fund to be at BCF as a permanent endowment to support neighborhood grants, and that's exactly how it will be used. Small grants for neighborhoods, forever, in William Donald Schaefer's name. What a perfect way to memorialize this man. And if you want more information, go to please www.bcf.org, and we'll put that on our website as well.
That's wonderful.
So we're about to take a break. We're going to come right back, so please stay with us, Ed McCarthy and Mark Steiner. I'm Mark Steiner.
And I'm Anthony McCarthy.
And the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. So we're going to turn our attention from Mayor William Donald Schaefer to the beating, the savage beating, really, of this young woman at a McDonald's. The other night, and that I saw Chrissy Lee Polis, who was a transgender woman, and I saw the video. Was beaten. Did you see it?
I did. I watched it. I had friends all over the country sending me emails about it, Mark. It was absolutely devastating to watch and heartbreaking to watch, to see that kind of madness unleashed. And these young girls just seem to be
18 and 16, I think,
seem to be filled 14. With such rage. And I watched it several times. I'll admit to you, I watched it because I didn't get it at first. I just didn't understand, and then tried to understand the backstory for those folks who are listening who may not have heard or seen the news coverage. What was perceived as a young woman was at a McDonald's. There was a confrontation, and she was literally beaten by two young women. A woman intervened.
An older woman
named Vicky Toms intervened, trying to pull them off, trying to protect the young girl, but was in fact punched in the face herself.
Right.
It was horrible to watch. The whole incident was videotaped by a McDonald's employee.
Laughing as he taped.
Laughing the whole time. It was a young lady laughing as she taped.
Lady, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. And making comments as she taped. Instead of trying in a place of business, instead of trying to break up the fight, she decided to videotape it and post it online.
I watched the tape today of Chrissy Lee Polis, the 22-year-old transgender woman who was beaten up before she was beaten up when she was being interviewed by The Sun on their blog about being transgender. She'd been beaten.
Mm-hmm.
She'd been raped before, and that. And other things that happened to her, and she was standing out saying that my family supports me and I'm who I am. I'm not going to be ashamed of who I am. And, I mean, this is clearly they attacked her because I think they'd have this – there was violence inside these two girls that has to be dealt with. They have to deal with. And it was also because this woman was transgender.
I think so as well.
And went to a ladies' room.
Mm-hmm. And I think they were angry
right.
about that, even though she had come out of the ladies' room.
Right.
There was no threat to them or
right.
anything.
She was not in the ladies' room.
She wasn't
happens.
In the lady room, right. ladies' room at all.
And go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, and Mark, I would add this, that when the video was originally posted online,
yeah.
just the comments of outrage and horror, I guess where my heart breaks a little bit, not just from the violence that we witnessed in the videotape, but now that it has become clear in a lot of conversations around this being a hate crime and that Chrissy Polis is, in fact, transgender.
Right.
Some people are, in fact, changing their mind about the incident and writing things like, well, she deserved it or he deserved it. And he should have never went into a ladies' room and a lot of other things. And so we are there is an enormous amount of work to be done to understand the violence that these young girls exacted on this human being and also our reaction to it. How some people, once they found out that Chrissy Polis was transgender, in fact, no longer thought it was such a horrible thing that happened.
It was justified.
It was justified. So we have a lot of work to do, not to change people's minds or perceptions, but actually to have a dialogue and conversation about all of the diversity in our community.
I'll introduce her, Sandy Rawls, founder of Trans Uniteds with us. We're going to get her on the phone here in a minute. A lot of people calling. We're going to get to your calls, all of them. We called in a row, Jessica, Leo, Maria, the first three callers up. I want to remind you all that tonight that there is a rally for Chrissy Polis, victim of this of a hate crime in Baltimore, at the McDonald's itself at 6315 Kenwood Avenue in Rosedale. It starts at 7 o'clock this evening.
I'll be there.
You're going to be there?
I'll be there.
I have an event at the Johns Hopkins School of Education I have to moderate, or I would be there myself. 6315 Kenwood Avenue in Rosedale, out in Baltimore County. The young girls who did the beating are in jail. And one of the things I wrote, and I'm going to posit this to everybody here, and we can wrestle with this a minute too maybe, was I wrote on someone's Facebook page when they wrote about this that it was just too horrible to watch this poor young woman being beaten the way she was beaten savagely. The fact that nobody in the McDonald's stood and tried to stop the beating. And it made me think of the anger that resides in some people that allows them to laugh at other people's pain while they're being beaten, and what to do about it. So if these two young girls who did this beating, who have all seem to have a history of violence, do you put them in jail? Do they have to be – maybe they do have to be separated from society. Maybe that – but then what happens to them in jail? They not become less violent. They become more violent.
That's
Jail is one of the most horribly violent places that we have. So what happens to these kids? Maybe they do have to be separated. That might have to be the issue. But and I use the word separated instead of jail because maybe this is a time, a unique opportunity.
A teachable moment.
To come together. Supposing something like a community conferencing took place where all the parties were brought together and are forced to stay together for periods of time and wrestle with this and deal with what happens. The employees at McDonald's, the young women who did the beating, people from the transgender community, everybody's family involved from outside of that, and Ms. Polis, if she wants to be part of it, and her family. Could this be a moment where you can bring people in? And I think you also have to deal with the question of the kind of violence we have in our society. Reminding tomorrow, by the way, we're going to be talking about links between mental health, violence, capitalism, and more with a number of guests. Dante Wilson, David Thurston, and others are going to be joining the show to talk about this kind of violence taking place and what we can do to address it. But I think that it's so horrendous. I mean, just watching it made me ill. It's made me physically ill. And Sandy Rawls, you're with us, aren't you?
Yes, I'm here.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you, Mark and Anthony?
Hey, well, Sandy,
so
welcome.
Give us your thoughts. You heard what I just said, what Anthony said earlier, and then we're going to open the phones.
Yeah, I agree. This is a time to bring a lot of people in on the issue. The issue is not new to the transgender community. Hell, it's not new to the LGBT community. This happens all the time. Just recently, back in January, three young men ran down a transsexual woman in East Baltimore on St. Paul Street and tried to cut her genitalia off. So these incidents happen a lot. And iterate on this, that families, it's not the conversations that take place out in the open. It's the conversations that take place at the kitchen table, that take place in the synagogues, the churches, and the masjids. It's the conversations that take place, you know, in the homes, in the bedrooms where people are talking, having these private conversations. And they're not including peace and love and respect for all mankind. And that is left out of the conversation.
And just to touch on the fact that, these were two angry young women.
Because
they are no stranger. They are no strangers to what they did. Obviously, they have police records from assaulting people. You know, and we just need a better system in place that can reach our youth today, because there was somebody shot a block away from my office when I was on my way over here. So this is a cry out to all people to understand that you have to value human life. We can't keep killing each other off this way. We cannot do that. But to touch back on the issue with transgender violence, it's not new to the community. This is something that's going on for a long time. And the reason why we're having this vigil tonight is to let people know that this has been going on for some time in our community. And the very fact that we want Lisa Polis to have, Chrissy Polis to have justice from this. We want her to get justice from this.
And, you know, Mark, the interesting thing about what Sandy shared with us is that we, you know, in the gay and lesbian, bisexual and transgender community, oftentimes to give you an example, there was a young African-American gay male killed over the weekend outside of one of the gay bars in West Baltimore. And it's been reported, but they don't report that he was gay. They don't report that it was a hate crime, that he was targeted. And too often we don't know that the gay and lesbian, bisexual and transgender community is being hunted down and they're being targeted. And it's happening. And that's what Sandy means when she says this is nothing new. Transgender women are attacked and beaten all the time. Police reports are taken and dismissed. Now, I happen to know this police commissioner. I happen to know his senior command staff, and I know that they are concerned and actually work on this issue. But we have a serious problem, Mark, and I think the way to go is what you posited with us at the beginning of this conversation. We have to find a way. And as Sandy said, we've got to find a way. We could just lock these two young ladies up, and certainly they need to be punished for what they've done. But we have to find a way to expand the conversation, because the only way we're going to change our society is, as Sandy said, we've got to change people's hearts and the way they think and the things they say in private that they dare not say in public, the things they do in the dark that they dare not do in the light. That is the way we're going to change our society and make it a better place for all people.
Let me open the phones here. If people want to join this conversation, we want to get them in as many as we can before the end of the hour. 410-319-8888. And Jessica in New York State, you're on the air. Hi, Jessica. Welcome.
Hey. Am I on?
Yes, you're on, yes.
Okay. Hey. Yeah, I'm up from Rochester, New York. Well, from Buffalo. I go to University of Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm actually at a YouTube channel, and I saw my friend sent the video to me. I didn't know what it was, and I watched it, and I'm a transgender woman, and I've been assaulted before by military officers, you know, stuff like that. And, you know, as soon as I realized it, I became, like, sick to my stomach. Like, I immediately called some friends. I have some people coming from New York City. But it's, like, it's disgusting. And you look at it, just the video, they come back multiple times.
Multiple times.
I had some things to say, but now I'm, like, just shaking. I'm so mad. I'm actually at the McDonald's right now. And it's just to be here, like, the energy, like, in this area is crazy. And, you know, actually, one of the things that I've been planning to do, I'm just about to graduate from college. I'm trying to start a safe bathroom access campaign in my community in Western New York, because this is really common. This happens, this is not, like Sandy said, this is very, very common. And, you know, trans people have been around since, you know, the beginning of human existence. This is, you know, and it's about time that this stuff stops. Where do you draw the line? And when do you, like, you know, say to politicians and people that are public figures, no, you can't talk like that anymore. You can't, you know, talk about people's rights that way, and you can't dehumanize people by talking about them like that. And I've, you know, I came prior to transition, and it's a weird thing. I was very masculine, very male identified, and you know, bodybuilder, all that stuff, and I had a lot of privilege. I'm white. You know, blonde hair, blue eyes, and tall. I was very athletic. And but I knew what privilege was, and just as soon as I transitioned, it all went away, you know? And I just look at it like that, and it's just, you know, I'm sure, and like Chrissy said, this isn't the first time. She's dealt with it many, many times.
She has. She talked about that.
So it made me, all I have to say, I mean, I'll get off the air, you know, after this, but it's just, it made me sick, and I have class tomorrow at 9 a.m., but I drove 7 hours to get here because I'm so upset about it.
Mm. Well, welcome to Baltimore. Welcome to Maryland, I should say. But, yeah, you're right. This happens. You know, I want to touch on a legislation piece that you just mentioned about politicians and stuff that need to get their voice involved so that people can follow their lead as well, because they carry a lot of weight with their voices. That House Bill 235 failed in the legislation. We wanted it to fail simply because it didn't have public accommodations in it. And this is the reason why we need to have public accommodations in the bill, so that we can add protections to gender anti-discrimination legislation so that people are not falling victim to these types of attacks in public restaurants and hospitals and hotels. You have doctors who don't want to wait on transgender people because they want to hurry them out of the clinic and the hospital simply because they are in the, you know, they're transgender people. So the transgender people know this. They don't go get the health care that they need, and they die in their 40s and they die in their 30s. This is wrong. We have to change this.
Sandy, I just wanted to get to some other callers here, and Jessica, I appreciate you being part of the calling.
Most definitely.
And I'm glad you're at Kenwood. 410-319-8888. Leo, you're on the air.
Yeah, good evening, Mark, and good evening, Anthony.
Hey, Leo.
How you doing? Can you hear me?
Yes. Go ahead, Leo.
Okay, first of all, let's prosecute unprovoked violence, hate crimes notwithstanding. Unprovoked violence should be prosecuted to the full extent of the law, jail time and or physical punishments. If I could do it, I would impose physical punishments of a type and kind. People can dish it out, but sometimes they can't take it. The other thing is, however, I'm opposed to the transgender concepts, even though I know it's here, I know it's legal in this country, and my feeling is that identity, sexual identity, is important. And God, I was taught as a child that you're born male or female, and now we have Johns Hopkins University, the leader of transgender surgical procedures, and people coming from all over the world to have their sex change. Except for being a hermaphrodite, I don't understand why it's necessary for people to change their identity.
Okay, Leo, I'm only interrupting. Leo, just a second. I'm interrupting because this is we don't have a lot of time, and another caller has written in asking a question about what are we talking about with transgender. I think it's only fair at this point to let Sandy kind of respond. And maybe, Sandy, just again, for listeners who don't know, transgender versus transvestite versus...
Let me say this, Mark, real quick. Leo, I understand you can oppose our gender identity and expressions. You can oppose that all you want. But we're here tonight to say that because you disagree, you don't have the right to infringe on our civilities, on our civil rights, on our human rights, on our right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. This young lady came to use a restaurant. Whether she was coming here to get a hamburger, french fries, or use the restroom, nobody has a right to step on her human rights, her civil rights, her equal rights, whatever kind of rights you want to talk about. We want the same rights that everybody else has, that we can utilize these places of public accommodation without being harassed and beaten.
Sandy, explain for our listeners, like Leo and the other listeners who are calling in saying they don't understand what transgender means. Explain that for them.
Well, first of all, transgender is an umbrella term.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Just picture a branch, a tree, with all these branches on it. Transgender represents different demographics of people. You're talking anywhere from transsexual, transvestite, crossdresser, asexual, pansexual, bisexual, intersex. Intersex individuals who Leo referred to as transvestite, which is a derogatory term, I might add. But also those individuals are born with both genitalia. So people have to express themselves from inside out, not outside in. So whatever's politically correct came from the outside, not the inside. So the political correctness, we don't live that political correctness. We try to live with what's going on
and sign and what we need to do to become productive citizens of society. But that's the difference. That's the transgender umbrella right there.
Mark, what I was going to say, and I know we're running out of time, and a bunch of folks are calling
in. Yeah, a lot of people calling in.
Is that we have community time and time again. In Annapolis, we've pushed not to include them in legislation because we knew that it would be even more difficult to pass the legislation. Oftentimes, activists fight for the civil liberties of gays and lesbians and don't believe that the transgender cause is one that gays and lesbians should be fighting for. So we have a lot to clean up in our own house when it comes to the civil liberties and the protection of transgender people. But I have to say this. For people who dismiss transgender people and dismiss that violence against them is a hate crime, when we began to say and when we began to see a certain class of people is okay to hurt and okay to ostracize, okay to hate, then they next come and knock on our door. And Mark, my heart broke. I don't know if you remember a few years ago when a man beat about a 9 or 10 month old child to death because he said the child was too feminine.
And so we've
got to stop this now. We've got to draw a line in the sand. Today it may be transgender people. Tomorrow they're coming for you and I, Mark, because we're too liberal or we're too whatever. We've got to change the dynamic in this society. And if we don't put peace and love in the dialogue and conversation, we're not going to change people's heart. And until we can change people's hearts, we're not going to fix this problem in our society. Whether it's race, homophobia, sexism, we're not going to fix these problems.
That's right.
Let me go to the phone. So I deeply appreciate what you were saying, Anthony. I think that that's a very powerful point to the gay community and the entire community about this whole issue, which is why we try to do as many shows as we can around this to kind of broaden the discussion, whether you believe in it or not.
Or understand it.
Understand it. We have to talk about it. And Maria, you're on the air. Hi, Maria. You're on the air.
Here. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. A couple things. I just wanted to say that I will be at the rally tonight. I had another organizing meeting tonight, but I think this is so important that we all turn out to support our transgender brothers and sisters. I want to make a point, too, about the religious community, because as an activist, I come into contact with a lot of different really good activists, but unfortunately, some of them are use the religious aspect of this and the you know things that they pick out of the Bible to justify their you know the homophobia, and same way that the Bible was used to justify slavery. And I think that this is a you know you were talking about a teachable moment earlier for the religious community. I mean, anyone who watched that video had to be, as my husband and I were on Saturday, really physically ill, like you said, Mark.
I was sick.
This cannot be tolerated. And I want to make the point that the Southern Christian Leadership Conference Baltimore chapter, a fairly new chapter of which I'm a board member, is coming out and supporting Ms. Polis. And, you know, injustice is injustice, and you cannot turn your face away from it. So I just hope that more religious really come to understand that by promoting homophobia, they're really promulgating hate, and this is the end result of it.
And Maria, we're running out of time. I do appreciate you being part of this show.
Thank you.
I want to thank again, thanks Sandy Rawls, founder of TransUnited. I want to encourage people who can go over to go to the rally for Chrissy Polis, victim of a hate crime in Baltimore. It's 6315 Kenwood Avenue in Rosedale, which is over by Middle River on the east side of Baltimore in Baltimore County. Tonight, 7 to 8:30 p.m., correct?
Yes, 7 p.m.
So, folks, go there and do all you can to support this, and we will continue these conversations with all of us about what's going on. And because the last caller, we can't, Jun Lee, I'm sorry, was one of the last callers who wants to talk about can you legislate someone's heart? No, you can't. Maybe that's what we'll pick up next time and talk about what that means.
It's a good question.
It's a great question, but we don't have time. But thank you. Thank you so much.
Thanks,
Sandy.
Okay.
Sandy Rawls.
No problem. I'll see you later, Anthony.
See you tonight.
Okay, bye-bye.
Brother Anthony McCarthy, thank you so much.
Always great to be here. I look forward to our Mondays together, Mark.
Me too. I do all the time. I want to remind you that the Mark Steiner Show is made possible, brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. For more information, www.mecu.com, or you can go to the steinershow.org website and click on their banner. All the information is right there. Thank you all for listening. We'll be right back. When we come back, we're going to hear a conversation that we taped at Washington College in Chestertown on labor journalism in America. So with two young people. which is really interesting. So stay with us for that. We'll be right back. Don't go away.